Good morning. I don't know whether I'm concerned about you lifting a title off Dale Winton or not, but I can't think of anything much to say about this. I thought I'd come up with something about Dale Winton and some kind of comparison, but I can't do it, I'm afraid. Yes, you've seen anybody in the. I know there's lots of you been around the OER world, and you'll have seen the thing on the right. I haven't put the Creative Commons bit underneath, I apologise, but I mean, just really a comment before we get on to the interesting things. Open education resources are part of a much wider kind of movement which seems to be going on at the moment into openness is a good thing in a variety of different kind of ways. And open education resources is only just one bit of that. Clearly, we've had open research resources for a very, very long time. The kind of economic and institutional reasons for that are quite interesting as a comparison to open education resources, in as much as individuals can usually monetize their research outputs in a way which their education or teaching outputs is difficult to monetize. That is, if you have got four really good four-star international research publications, you are certainly probably worth something in a number of institutions. If you've got four wonderful OERs, doesn't necessarily follow. And I think the one that's actually going to come along here shortly is a much greater emphasis on open data, for example. Also, I mean, one of the biggest changes that I've seen in my relatively short life working professionally in e-learning rather than in an amateurish way, although my colleagues would probably say I never made the leap from amateur. And now that I'm kind of out of it, you know, I've left it back to the professionals. But certainly the rise of open source software has been an interesting one. To the extent that, for example, the REF has just chosen Moodle as its e-learning platform. We're doing some work with Santander, not giving them financial advice, much as they probably needed. But their platform that they've chosen is Moodle, which is quite interesting, you know, in a corporate IT sort of world that, you know, these things are moving. Those of us who kind of moved away from Blackboard, because this is public being recorded and may become public, I can't. Which I have to be kind of calmer about these things than I used to be. I'm obviously kind of looking at this now that Wimber and Illuminate have gone the kinds of ways that maybe give us some cause for thinking again. So it's a wider thing than OERs. The culture, the economics of openness, I guess will be something which we'll get to in time. It's not really been evaluated properly, and the OLTF has certainly not done a job on making a sensible, reasonable case as far as I can see. They should have read an excellent article in Studies in Higher Education some time ago about the differences between economies of scale and economies of scope and economies of size, because they've got it wrong and the article got it right. Some of the drivers, it's worth remembering this, I think. Well, you can bring up your own list, but there are lots and lots of things going on. This one on the bottom, which I added last night, is probably those of us who live in the real world of universities rather than those of you from Oxford. But the real world where it's muddy, you know, life goes on in places like Coventry, we're kind of worried about £9,000 a time for fees. You know, this could get competitive. Out there. Nobody knows. It's been a big change, and you know what the behaviour of students is going to be in this new marketplace is very difficult to know. But clearly, some kind of link is going to be drawn to a greater extent between those who are coughing up £30,000, £40,000, £50,000 for an undergraduate education and what they perceive as the quality of that education is probably going to come together. Even if they don't stop studying, I think they will be kind of more conscious of what it is that they are getting. So the drivers are certainly out there. I put this slide up, it's not really of too much relevance to this, but I originally created this slide to try and explain to a bunch of very intelligent people, mainly GPs, you can question the assumption if you wish, but who were working in the emergency call-out area. It was a consortium of 13 out-of-hours practices that we're doing some work with. And, you know, they've got a problem. They've got hundreds of people out there who occasionally do unfortunate things, that, you know, following the case of a German doctor and a case of administering morphine. Apparently couldn't count to 10 properly. Gave the patient 10 times as much than they might have had, and with the unfortunate consequences. There is, as the NHS is shifting this direction, a training requirement, but, you know, which can be met through the intelligent application of online learning. I mean, you can see the case for this. It's dispersed, it's focused, it's needed, it needs tracking, it needs monitoring so that they can demonstrate the things they've been doing. That's what we've been doing. The issue is, you know, those of you who worked in the business, is that the issue of working with academics, and I used to be one, you know, once upon a time, is they'll always tell you the content is coming, but when you get it, it's not quite what you understood as content, and it's not quite when you wanted it. These guys, I know, you know, these guys are exactly the same. Getting content is or any indication. I put this slide up about, you know, how their development path might go on the content side, where it might come from. And I thought, you know, I'm going to sell you this. Guys, come on, you know. The natural thing is there must be some stuff out on this. I know there is stuff about out-of-hours triage telephone nurses and open learning, because I took a course in one of the states in the United States, and I am now an accredited, according to that, people who are offering that course, triage nurse in Manitoba. Now, I don't suggest that if you have a car crash in Manitoba, you call me. But it just shows you, you know, that there is stuff out there. It's not very good if I can pass by just pressing a few buttons, but I am proud of my online certificate, which was delivered to me. I was trying to sell them this, you know, look, let's begin our search by seeing what's available. What I discovered was that they were all closet teachers. They didn't want to be GPs at all. What they wanted to do was sit down and generate content. Now, a lot of this stuff is a bit, you know, probably all right technically, but pedagogically it was not terribly exciting. And this came as a revelation to them. The one thing they wanted to talk to me about after, you know, over lunch and things was, you know, turning this on its head. You know, that we should, I thought we should start there and end up here as a last resort. They wanted to start here and end up there as a last resort. And, you know, it was the basis of a kind of conversation. But that leads me on to the sort of business models. Those of you involved in the JISC world, those of you who have to occasionally go to working groups and committees and get involved, will know that business models are very important in the JISC discourse. Those of you who have been involved will also know that the majority of people in JISC have no idea what one is and probably wouldn't recognise it if it jumped up and hit them. So this is some work we were doing on the lecture, big lecture capture project, LTAC, which some of you may have heard of, where, you know, they asked me if I'd do a little bit about business models. I mean, why would you invest in lecture capture in a university? And I've really put this bit in, which is just about what is a business model. And the business model is no more nor less than how does a business take resources inputs and do something with them which actually creates some kind of value for somebody. And of course, in the OER world, public what you might call public value is actually quite important. But in these projects, we do have to demonstrate to JISC, HEA, who have to demonstrate to HEFCE, who have to then demonstrate to their funders that actually we're doing something which generates public value in some way. So it is quite important, a whole number of levels. I think it's also very important at institutional levels to actually begin to try and understand what it is that at an institutional level we're trying to get out of doing this. The teaching and learning world of people, because they're, you know, a lot of them come from strange backgrounds, like learning about education or sociology or anthropology or, you know, computer science or whatever it is, are not very good at explaining what the benefits of they do in business terms. You know, it's better teaching or it's more fun or it's much more engaging, but you know, so tell me how that fits more generally, especially in straitened times, it's quite difficult. Now, there are possible models. Now, there are a lot more kinds of reasons for doing it than I've put down here, and I've just jotted a few more down because listening to the MIT. I mean, an interesting thing about, you know, content and OERs is it's quite clear that for most universities, you cannot any longer, you know, base your business model on the possession of content. That's not going to work. Down in Oxford some time ago when it was raining one day and I had my little one with me, we did get on that funny little train called the Oxford Story and go round and round. And it was fun. I guess those of you who are from Oxford probably have never done this. You know, you probably wouldn't be seen dead on it, right? You know, I mean, it would be a disaster. It's like coming to Coventry. You know, people don't from the university walk into Coventry Cathedral, right opposite, one of the most iconic buildings of the 20th century. Nobody goes in, right? Now, the Oxford Story, if you do have your kids, nephews, nieces from America coming up, take them on the Oxford Story. It's a funny little train and it goes around, and it, you know, it's all right. The argument about Oxford is Oxford, you know, one of the questions you can ask is, why is Oxford University in Oxford? Apart from the obvious answer, it looked bloody stupid in Cambridge. You know, it seems to be that it has something to do, according to the Oxford Story, of there were books and a monastery and a library built up, and people who couldn't, and when before printing came along, you had to come to the books, and content was the driver. Very rapidly then moves on, you think, well, hang on, that doesn't really explain it too much, but kind of the argument is content clearly cannot work beyond that. And yet Oxford University is still here. It is still, as far as those of us who are terribly jealous of these things can tell, doing okay for itself. You know, the rankings are all right. You know, you're up there. And you, there is a model, a business model, about what you're doing, which is going to sustain you quite well, I would think, in the coming time. And a number of us who are not in that kind of lucky position, and just a couple of things that came out of the MIT film, I wish Nottingham would get themselves a cameraman who understood that actually putting the light behind the subject and pointing your camera to the window doesn't work. But the MIT one, you know, that lovely professor at the end, I think a Chinese guy or something, I was just aspiring one day to go to MIT. Oh, wonderful stuff. An MIT education. Interesting phrase. There is a business model in there of something which is about what an MIT education is, which has got nothing to do, which is not based on content. So we have to get out of that. So what might you do this? Well, it could be because you want to differentiate the product. And one element of product differentiation is actually in short product cycles that we have now, rapid product development is a model, a business model. Can you get into the market faster than other people can? Can you move around? One way in which you might do that is actually through using open resources. It allows you to develop things much quicker. It might be in the Nottingham case that you suddenly have a model which says, well, we are going to have multiple outlets. In which case, it might be, just as if you were having multiple stores, it might be handy to have a common level of stock across those stores, and content might be, you know, the use of content might be that stock. You might have a kind of taster-pull-in model. These things are like trailers. One of the interesting things we've done Possibly by accident is we actually have trailers of some of our resources on some sites which link into the full resources on other sites. You know, it's like your kids. I'm sure you've got them at home. If you've got a teenager like I have, and they goes with their mates down to the cinema, they're sitting there on Facebook or whatever it is they're going for, looking at the movie trailers, Facebooking, deciding which movie they're going to see before they go. You know, the world is getting a bit like that. You might want to exploit stars, as you'll see in a minute, when I get onto something interesting. It is actually possible to steal other people's stars and exploit them as if they were your own. This is kind of like, you know, guest appearances on TV shows by people. You know, the Simpsons, Friends, and one or two others took this to an art form. I think this is going to be important for us, that some of us are going to have to de-emphasize competition on price. We cannot afford, when higher fees come in, a regional race to the bottom, and that's what it will be for some universities. You don't believe this? Yeah, then talk to some people at Gloucestershire, for example. Maybe there's one which seems to have some kind of worries. I wouldn't pick them out too much, but you know, it's one that's on the hefty kind of list. And there is this thing that's out there called viral marketing, which probably is much misunderstood, in as much as viral marketing does need some targeting to work properly. You know, can you get a specific message to the specific people? So, you know, if you do land on a Facebook group for knitting, and there is one, don't ask me how I know, but there are several. If you do land on a Facebook site for knitting, then clearly kind of messages about wool and knitting needles or whatever people use in knitting is probably quite of some relevance. But viral marketing may well be an important kind of thing. If we can harvest the data of who is landing on our site, can we then do something else with that data rather than just saying people landing? We're not kind of there yet. Now then, the other biggest change that I've seen in Coventry University in the last 5 years is that our homepage. And this is where the stories, I hope I'm quite happy to sign your release form. Just don't promote them too much, because this is where the stories start. About 5-6 years ago, I guess it must have been 2005-06, when I moved into the e-learning area, we wanted to do iTunes U. We said, look, you know, we'd been playing around with technologies where we could video share. We were going to buy endless kinds of streamers and backups and storage. And, you know, we went and saw the IT director and said, storage. He fainted and moaned. We moved on. We discovered iTunes U, like many people did. We were quite early into iTunes U. University, that time, threw a hissy fit, basically. Said, no, can't do that. And we said, okay, that's all right. What about YouTube? Oh, no, that's even worse. We then said, you do know people are putting stuff about the university up on YouTube anyway. They're called students. Oh, yes, but they're students. And there aren't design students. Yeah, well, they're totally uncontrollable, always have been. I mean, that's characteristic. It's a requirement to be an art and design student in this. So the answer was basically no. We could never get an answer about why the no was there. Because, of course, what they do control is access to these servers. That's the problem. We didn't have root server access, so we couldn't kind of get around this in any great way. And it is a bit public, so we play around too much. We might get our fingers wrapped. About 2 years later, I think it was, they suddenly discovered iTunes U, the marketing department. It's good to know that they were up with the technology in the world. You know, the rest of us have been inhabiting for some time. And because they discovered it, they said, where's the content? Where's the stuff? We want a CUTV channel. We want an iTunes U channel. We want even a Facebook page. This, that, and the other. And at that point, suddenly, you know, they're from having been told, this is a bad thing, boys. You can't do that. Here it is, plastered across the home page. Less obvious is the Facebook and whatever that else there is hovering down here. iTunes U, I think, that's the CUTV, that's the YouTube channel. So once marketing get hold of it, and typical of marketing departments, because they then thought it was their idea and they were clever. And look at us, we discovered this new social media that we can use to our benefit. Then the kind of pressure was on to start generating the content and doing something with it. Now that's fine. Yeah, if they're going to do my job for me and claim it as their own, I do not have any problem with this at all, as long as it's done and it's out there. I've got plenty of other stuff to do about teaching and learning without doing this. But if I can exploit it, then that's great. So some comparisons. We have an institutional repository, Curve, and many thanks to GISC, because we spent an awful lot of their money building it. And it's successful. Yeah, and we've had an awful lot of help from people in this room in collaboration in building this. It currently houses over 15,000 resources. Give you some sense of scale on that. I think Joram Open's got 10,500 in it. And that's the national kind of repository, much vaunted. It's accessed over 1,000 times a day, mainly internally. By any kind of metrics that you've got, this is a success. You know, it's well used. It's a piece that it's a service which now is uncontroversial, even though it's quite expensive in the sense that if you said we're going to take this out, we're going to take this away, the cries of pain and the shouts would come down and say, no, you know, that's off limit. Take away the PDP service, the portfolio service, that's not a problem, you know. That's gone. Our iTunes U site has received over 2.5 million hits. Now, you know, we're an ordinary little university that nobody's heard of, sitting up in the Midlands, in the rain. You know, the one thing we have that you don't have is parking. But, you know, that's fine. We've got over 2.5 million hits on our site. So this is actually, I don't know, I just find that number kind of staggering every time I think about it. When I compare it to, you know, what supposedly is the readership of the prospectus, for example, or any other kind of marketing channel we've got, if you said, well, it's got 2.5 million hits on that particular channel, you would think, no. This isn't our most popular podcast. I found another one. As of yesterday, it had 76,000 hits. Leamington Spa, where I live, is actually quite famously now one of the centres of the video gaming production industry, with Philip Oliver, his little boy. It doesn't employ anybody. It doesn't have about 30 of them or 40 of them down there doing this stuff. But I mean, there's, you know, it's. But and this thing is a straightforward 45-50 minute lecture. It's engaging, it's interesting, but it is not in any way racy, controversial, worrying, or whatever. The average hit rate on our podcast is over 10,000. I don't know, Peter, how that compares with you, possibly less. But it's a lot. Professorial lectures, this is our own professors when they get ennobled or appointed or whatever, have to do this because, you know, we've pinched this off real universities. If we get 30 to 40 people, that's good. If we get more than that, we can't afford the sandwiches. Even the most tedious titles will get over 1,000 hits off some of our sites. And when we talked to partner colleges the other day on our own Cascade project, talked to a number of partner colleges, they will say, you know, they do use this stuff, but they're not picking it up from the repository. They really don't know about the institutional repository at all. It's not somewhere they would go and visit and look at things. CERN is essentially, I think, an internal thing. It's a great content management system, and that's what we use it for. Librarians love it because it can be tagged and have metadata and version control and, you know, all the things that they love and want and so on. Trouble is, really nobody goes and looks at it. But that's not a problem, because you can have multiple, more and more, I think we're getting multiple distribution of these things. So a story. The latest iteration of what we've done is called is our Podbean site. Don't know if you've come across Podbean. I only came across it this way, but I mean it's kind of the fashionable blogging portal. Wiki, I don't know. It's a nice site. It's clearly a direct descendant of the underground work we did in the days where you weren't allowed to have these things, but our IT services people said, it's impossible, we can't do podcasting. And we said, okay, that's fine. And then I think we found some German open source piece of software which did it beautifully. Thank you very much. So we started podcasting for people, and the thing kind of grew up. And actually the genie got out the bottle. Marketing people don't like genies out of bottles. They might like bottles, but you know, genies out of them is not something they go for. But you know, these genies are out of these bottles. Nobody even knows where the genie is, never mind getting it back into the bottle. I suspect we probably lost the bottle as well. So, you know, none of this is going to kind of work. It's out there. This thing is probably the third generation of what we've been doing. I think, you know, it's fair to say it's third generation, so it's the latest one. A lot of this stuff, and I was interested, you know, I was reminded looking at the MIT video. I'm an economist by trade. I used to teach business strategy and was dean of a business school before I did this. I used to regularly use MIT OCW. A lot of stuff in there. It's amazing how uninteresting and not very good an awful lot of it is. You think, MIT, it must be good. Some of it is just the most boring handouts and things that you've ever seen, and more or less totally unintelligible, I have to say. But they, you know, some of it's good, but I mean, it's not as good as you'd expect. When you look at our stuff, and I was trawling around having a look, some of this stuff is extremely boring. Still getting quite a lot of hits. None of it is the kind of stuff which ought to give anybody institutionally any feeling that this is going to cause any great harm. As far as I can work out, we've never had any complaints or takedown requests or anything about anything that's there. The risk that, you know, the idea that somehow this is risky is not being borne out in practice. I cannot find a Podbean team or a What's It team or whatever. I can't find a department or any great infrastructure for it. The reason I can't find infrastructure is presumably it's all out there. Or quite a lot of it is based on Curve. You know, the stuff is in Curve, but we just export the URLs. But we don't, whoever's doing it does it. And there's no policy, which is wonderful, because it can be anything we want. And nothing very much that it's readily discernible. On the other hand, it's not. You know, it's not turned out to be the Wild West. It's much more like, you know, benign Oxford on a sunny day by the river and people punting up and down, and isn't life wonderful? So let's just have a look at the site, which is by far the most interesting thing. This isn't actually, I couldn't find, this looks like the home page. You just see, I think this is just the most recent stuff that's there. But let me just take you through one or two things that we've got. And maybe this is a bit about the
about the business model, I suppose, and the way it's emerged. I mean, this is nobody sat down and said, thank you. Nobody sat down and said this is the business model. I was interested what you were saying about, you know, the individual and the institutional. Now, there is something in between in most institutions. They're called departments or research teams or institutes or, you know, whatever you call them. Now, those things in between, for a university or a country, may actually be very, very important. We are not good at everything. We hope that we are good on certain things and might be known from certain things. Automotive design, I suppose, would be the best known for us. But certainly we like to claim certain things in media and so on. And design generally. And it may be that some of the things that we do in those arenas are good, could be presented in this kind of way, which then give us an aura, an umbrella around which the rest is good. So if we look at, for example, the Bugatti lectures, what you can see is stuff which is by whatever. So this is there's an engineer from Ford. You can see here that this has already got over 49,000 hits. You know, automotive engineering, automotive design is supposed to be one of our big things. Moulton, who you will recognise as a name who once designed, or his father, I think, once designed a bicycle. These are people who are not necessarily, so this is, you know, this is actually, this work, we didn't invent this. Peter invented this. This is almost pure steeple moved across. You know, this is Pete Woodbridge, who you've met and worked with. And I think when I say I don't know who's behind this, the answer is it's Pete. You know, we know that, really. But Peter's not a person who actually sits there and engages himself with university policies too much. But does produce this, all on his own, virtually in spare time. So, you know, clearly this sort of stuff is actually quite important to us. But you can, one thing you can do is, quite interestingly, leverage other people's stars. So I'm not doing too well here. Wrong one. We also have a series of media sessions called Coventry Conversations, which seems to go quite well. And if you actually look at some of the people who have... I always need to... This guy was editor of The Sun in its most famous period. Also one of my ex-economics students. I taught him nothing that was of any use to anything he knows or did. But he qualifies almost as one of our most famous alumnus, you know. Somewhere down here, sorry, I can't find it, but somewhere down here we actually have people like Jeremy Paxman who have been involved in these things. We shelter quite nicely, thank you very much. Jeremy Paxman, not Coventry. No, he's not. I mean, he's sitting in London doing his podcast with us. But nevertheless, it's about creating for this group of people a reputation, an aura, an umbrella around which things can be fitted. And you can see down the left here, I'm not going to show you all. I mean, I suggest if you want to, you go and look at things afterwards. You can see down here that actually what we've got is an awful lot of kind of categories, which don't necessarily cover everything we want, everything we do. But will allow us, through using various things, to showcase whatever it is we want to showcase. Another area in which we're trying to get into quite big and quite well known for is business as sport. But this is the education page. We do educational stuff. And you can see even the kind of fairly ordinary thing here is getting 43,000 hits. Not downloads, we're not as smart as Martin Bean and not, you know, differentiating about this. But this is fairly standard stuff, which is actually, following Peter, going on anyway. Okay? So what we're doing here, thank you, what we're doing here is we're actually capturing it, representing it in a way as kind of OERs. But of course they don't have all the meta tagging and all the notes and the wrappers and all the other stuff. Putting it out there, and what we're getting is an astonishing, for us, we think that's an astonishing level of hits. Marketing this as an activity probably has far more exposure than just about any other marketing activity in the university, as far as we can see. No, we don't know how it converts to students. But I will leave you with Lord Lever's classic dictum, which is, they tell me that half of everything we spend on advertising is wasted. Nobody can tell me which half. Well, you know, we're spending nothing on this. And it's very hard to believe that nothing is being wasted in what we do. It was pretty close to 0 minutes, Lisa. I mean, it wasn't bad for me. Yeah, you know. Every time I think about it, when I compare it to, you know, what supposedly is the readership of the prospectus, for example, or any other kind of marketing channel we've got, if you said, well, it's got 2.5 million hits on that particular channel, you would think, no. This isn't our most popular podcast. I found another one. As of yesterday, it had 76,000 hits. Leamington Spa, where I live, is actually quite famously now one of the centres of the video gaming production industry, with Philip Oliver, his local boy. It doesn't employ anybody. It doesn't have about 30 of them or 40 of them down there doing this stuff. But I mean, there's, you know, it's. But you know, this thing is a straightforward 45, 50-minute lecture. It's engaging, it's interesting, but it is not in any way racy, controversial, worrying, or whatever. People, the average hit rate on our podcast is over 10,000. I don't know, Peter, how that compares with you, possibly less. But it's a lot. Professorial lectures, this is our own professors when they get ennobled or appointed or whatever, have to do this because, you know, we've pinched this off real universities. If we get 30 to 40 people, that's good. If we get more than that, we can't afford the sandwiches. Even the most tedious titles will get over 1,000 hits off some of our sites. And when we talked to partner colleges the other day on our own Cascade project, talked to a number of partner colleges, they will say, you know, they do use this stuff, but they're not picking it up from the repository. They really don't know about the institutional repository at all. There's not somewhere they would go and visit and look at things. Curve is essentially, I think, an internal thing. It's a great content management system, and that's what we use it for. Librarians love it because it can be tagged and have metadata and version control and, you know, all the things that they love and want and so on. Trouble is, really nobody goes and looks at it. But that's not a problem, because you can have multiple, more and more, I think we're getting multiple distribution of these things. So a story. The latest iteration of what we've done is called is our Podbean site. Don't know if you've come across Podbean. I only came across it this way, but I mean it's kind of the fashionable blogging portal, wiki, I don't know,
It's a nice site.
It's clearly a direct descendant of the underground work we did in the days when you weren't allowed to have these things. But we, our IT services people said, it's impossible, we can't do podcasting. And we said, okay, that's fine. And then I think we found some German open source piece of software which did it beautifully. Thank you very much. So we started podcasting and for people, and the thing kind of grew up. And actually the genie got out of the bottle. Marketing people don't like genies out of bottles. They might like bottles, but you know, genies out of them is not something they go for. But you know, these genies are out of these bottles. Nobody even knows where the genie is, never mind getting it back into the bottle. I suspect we've probably lost the bottle as well, so you know, none of this is gonna kind of work. It's out there. This thing is probably the third generation of what we've been doing. I think, you know, it's fair to say it's third generation, so it's the latest one. A lot of this stuff, and I was interested, you know, I was reminded looking at the MIT video. I'm an economist by trade. I used to teach business strategy and was dean of a business school before I did this. I used to regularly use MIT OCW. A lot of stuff in there. It's amazing how uninteresting and not very good an awful lot of it is. You think, MIT, it must be good. Some of it is just the most boring handouts and things that you've ever seen, and more or less totally unintelligible, I have to say. But they, you know, some of it's good, but I mean, it's not. It's not as good as you'd expect. When you look at our stuff, and I was trawling around having a look, some of this stuff is extremely boring. Still getting quite a lot of hits. None of it is the kind of stuff which ought to give anybody institutionally any feeling that this is going to cause any great harm. As far as I can work out, we've never had any complaints or takedown requests or anything about anything that's there. The risk that, you know, the idea that somehow this is risky is not being borne out in practice. I cannot find a Podbean team, or a What's It team, or whatever. I can't find a department or any great infrastructure for it. The reason I can't find infrastructure is presumably it's all out there. Or quite a lot of it is based on Curve, you know, the stuff is in Curve, but we just export the URLs. But we don't, whoever's doing it does it. And there's no policy, which is wonderful, because it can be anything we want. And nothing very much that it's readily discernible. It's not turned out to be the Wild West. It's much more like, you know, benign Oxford on a sunny day by the river and people punting up and down, and isn't life wonderful? It was pretty close to 0 minutes, Lisa. I mean, that wasn't bad for me. Yeah, I mean,